Hello, everyone. So here we are, another digital ethics podcast. Finally, I've got around to making another one. I know I was a little bit slack last week, and I know it's also late in the week, but there's a fair bit of material up on the internet on the Moodle site, so I'm hoping that everyone's following along. But I will make a couple of podcasts over the next day or two and try and keep the site a bit more updated. I've also got a little video which I'm going to upload, just me talking a little bit about the assignment and assignment two. So I'll upload that soon. So this podcast is going to be pretty short. I just wanted to introduce the concept of hacking. Everyone, I'm sure, knows what hacking is or has some idea of hacking. But what we want to do is we want to try and come up with some kind of sort of definition or put some kind of ethical framework around the concept of hacking. So the questions we're asking is it ever permissible to hack a computer, to hack somebody's computer system? Or are hackers just criminals? Are there any kind of acceptable forms of hacking that we might say are okay? And make distinctions between kinds of people that are hackers that are very malicious and do bad things or break people's systems or try and gain unauthorized access to information, or against the kinds of hackers that might just maybe expose vulnerabilities in people's IT systems. So in the textbook, Tavani talks about a guy called, quotes a guy called Simpson, who gives a bit of a definition of a hacker as somebody who accesses a computer system or network without authorization of the owner. But also, Simpson's version of a hacker is generally has some kind of ethic, hacker ethic associated with them. So Simpson makes a distinction between crackers, which are hackers that break into a computer system with the pure intention of doing something really bad or doing something wrong or destroying data or unauthorized access of information and so on, against the kind of person who might hack into a computer system just for the pure intellectual challenge of it. And these are tend to be individuals who are, you know, very talented programmers or very talented IT people. They're very honest, they're not motivated by money, and they're careful not to harm anything when they do so. And so this used to be the kind of concept of what a hacker was. And I'm not going to incriminate myself, but I can speak a little bit from experience going back into the early 90s, where I was in a small community where there was some people that were into hacking. And from my memory, nobody ever did anything malicious. We were always just interested to see if we could get into other people's computer systems. That was back in the day. I don't really participate in that kind of thing anymore, mainly because I've sort of lost the hardcore technical skills. So the Tavani textbook does talk about this concept of the hacker ethic, and that does go back to the, you know, back in the day where hackers, or, you know, some people that were friends of mine and so on, that had a code of ethics associated with them. It wasn't spoken or it wasn't written down, but it was just this concept that, you know, let's see if it's possible to get into this computer system through some sort of back door or something. And there was never anyone that wanted to do any harm to the systems that they hacked into. And a lot of the people that were friends of mine were really, really talented and very clever. There is a guy called Stephen Levi that's discussed in the text, and he describes this hacker ethic, which has a bunch of different components. It's very controversial. I'm not entirely sure that I really agree with Stephen Levi. And his idea is, I'll just give you his 6 points. Access to computers should be unlimited in total. All information should be free. We should mistrust authority. Hackers should be judged by their intellectual ability to hack and so on, not by whether they've got a degree or not, or what their age is, or what their position or race or anything like that is. Then this bizarre sort of point that he makes, that you can create art and beauty on a computer, how that relates to his hacker ethic, I'm not sure. And then finally, that computers can change life for the better. So I think Stephen Levi is just a little bit cray, really, in my opinion. I don't really know many people that would really totally agree with that. In fact, there's a lot of people that don't agree with it. But there's a couple of kind of controversial points that Levi makes. One of them is that information should be totally free. And also Stephen Levi, has one of his arguments is that hackers provide a useful and important service to society. And he also argues that activities in cyberspace are virtual in nature, so they don't cause any real harm to people. That's his argument, right? So let me just go over that again, because that's kind of important. This is probably the more important kind of aspect of the hacker ethic. Information should be totally free. That's one of Levi's arguments. Hackers provide a really important, useful service to society in exposing, I guess, security vulnerabilities in IT systems. And that the activities in cyberspace are virtual in nature, so there's nothing real going on that's not real in the physical world, so they don't cause any harm. So let's just have a little look at some of those concepts and just pull them apart a little bit, right? So this idea that information should be totally free. There's plenty of people that have criticized this concept. This is, to be honest, this is quite a well-written about sort of idea within the philosophy of kind of computing and information and digital ethics. But plenty of people think that it's very naive or it's idealistic. And a guy called Spafford in the mid-2000s argued that, look, if we want to argue that information is free, then privacy is not possible, right? So if all information is free, how can we possibly keep everything private? And it wouldn't be possible to ensure the integrity and accuracy of information if it was free, because you're always going to get people that would mess about with the information or data or commit crimes such as identity theft and so on. So it's not really a realistic concept. What about the concept of Levi that hackers provide an important service? You could argue that if you had, let's say you had, you know, purely honest and duty-bound hackers that would inform a company that there's security vulnerabilities. And this actually has happened. It's happened in New Zealand in the set of information or the information that I've got on Moodle for this current week, which is cyber crime and computer crime. I highlight a couple of cases where hackers have exposed vulnerabilities in IT systems in New Zealand. But the analogy here, according to Spafford, is, look, we wouldn't expect somebody to start a fire in a crowded shopping mall in order to expose the fact that the shopping mall's sprinkler system wasn't very good. Nor would you be willing to thank a burglar who successfully broke into your house just to test your home security system, right? So these are the kind of analogies that this guy Spafford makes. And then the final one, does hacking only cause virtual harm, not real harm? So the idea here is that, because hacking and break-ins and even vandalism in cyberspace cause no real harm to any individuals, there are activities that only exist in the virtual realm, and therefore they're not real. Okay, so James Moore criticized this, our friend Jim Moore, who we've talked a lot about, and he calls this the virtuality fallacy, right? And he argues that, hey, look, real harm can be created in the virtual world, and we all know this. I think this is fairly easy to understand. You can actually cause real harm in the virtual world, and so we get to the point where we might think that Stephen Levi's arguments really don't hold a lot of water. So the final question I just want to consider in this podcast before we finish it off, it's just a nice small short one to introduce you guys to some of the ethical aspects around hacking, is can we ever justify ethically justify breaking into a computer system? So even though Spafford disagrees with a lot of Levi's arguments about the freedom of access to all information and so on, there could be some cases where it could be considered the right thing to do. So Spafford's definitely a Kantian. He's definitely a duty-based ethicist. And he says, look, if imagine that you were in a situation where the only way you could get access to some medical records was which were required to save somebody's life would be to hack into a computer system to get that information, then you would be ethically justified, maybe even duty-bound to do that, right? So that's the example that Tavani gives in the text. Spafford says, one example of doing the right thing, according to Spafford, in terms of breaking into a computer is if you were to break into a computer to get medical records, which would save somebody's life. He still argues, though, that because he's a Kantian, you know, you've got this problem with Kantian ethics that comes up against, you know, the universal law. So is it ever permissible to break into something? A Kantian would say, no, it's never permissible. So you kind of come up against that a little bit. So it seems that Spafford seems to be what I would call an ACT deontologist, ACT-based. So the act of breaking into a computer system purely to just get the medical records required to save somebody's life kind of trumps the idea that we should be duty-bound never to break into a computer system, all right? So Spafford believes that the morality is determined by the actions, not the results, right? You could run some kind of consequentialist argument, I think, that would say, yes, you'd be completely fine to break into a computer system to save somebody's life if you had to hack into their system. But Spafford's argument comes from a deontological perspective. So that's some of the ethical aspects around hacking, guys. I've pretty much followed the PowerPoint slides in Security and Cyberspace Part 2 PowerPoints, which is also summarized in the Tavani chapter on security and cyberspace, which you can find in the Tavani text and in my notes. So I'll wind this one up now, and I'll start working on the next one, which should be up in the next day or two. Thanks a lot, guys. See you later.